to ABC Sydney. This is The Weekend Show.
You're listening to Weekend with Simon Marnie on 702 ABC Sydney.
What you're up to at this time of the morning. You may well be lying in bed and savouring the fact that it's Saturday. But there's a flock of early birds getting out amongst it, pursuing any number of outdoor activities. And this morning, we're going to navigate our way through the sport of Roganing. Think orienteering, but apparently harder. To put us on course, Joel McKay joins us on the line, and I bet you with a 50-50 chance it's actually pronounced Mackay. How are you, Joel?
Good, thanks. Yes, you're right with the 50. So definitely Mackay.
You see,
either way is close.
I had a 50-50 handshake and I lost. So let's get cut to the chase. No pun intended. The difference between orienteering and Roganing.
Well, I guess the main difference is length. So your average Rogan is somewhere between 3 and 24 hours.
Ooh,
whereas almost all orienteering is somewhere in the range of sort of half an hour to an hour and a half or so.
And so you still navigate using a map?
Yes, it's a map and compass, just like orienteering, yeah.
And how does it, like, I have to go to different points?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, one of the other differences to most orienteering is that most orienteering is done from point to point. So yeah. they give you a map and they say, you've got to go to this one first and then this point next and so on. And your job is to find your way between them. Whereas in a Rogan, you get a map and it has many points on it, and typically they will give you more points than you could find in the time that's allowed.
Oh, so you don't necessarily get to all the points that that are laid out.
No, absolutely. That's by far the most common outcome. So a substantial part of the sport is actually a couple of hours that you have before you start running around, which you spend trying to plan an optimal route for the time that you've got. You know, how can I maximize the number of points, in that given time?
And so also then working out the terrain and the type of run or whatever you can do.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of thinking, okay, you know, there's 100 points to be won at the top of this hill here, but it's a 200 meter climb and it's probably going to be through difficult terrain and so on, or you know, there's 20 points over here but they're just down the road and I just have to walk down this track and they'll be right there.
So while orienteering is the cunning running, Roganing is the even more cunning running.
Yeah, there's definitely an extra element of strategy involved when you have to choose your course. And then of course during the event it's almost inevitable that you have to rearrange your course on the fly, because usually everyone plans to to do more than they'll really be able to do. You always bite off more than you can chew in the planning stage, because it's very easy to plan lots of checkpoints when you're sitting in an armchair at the start point. But then reality kicks in usually, 3 in the morning, and you have to modify your course somewhat usually.
So, I mean, given that you're the 2013 National Roganing Champion, what's to stop me just having my strategy of I'm going to follow Joel?
Yeah, it's interesting actually. We get that question quite a lot, and there's really nothing to stop you doing that. I mean, so long as you can keep up with the other person. That's there'll be some element of that. But if you can keep up with them, then in principle you could just kind of lurk behind them for 24 hours and then pop up at the end right next to them. And that would be okay, I guess.
Wow.
It would be a bit odd. I think I can safely say that I've never seen anyone do that for a substantial length of time. I mean, sometimes you end up going in the same direction as one or two other teams at the same sort of time. And that can actually be quite distracting because, your navigation is always going to be affected by some people right next to you who are walking in a particular direction. That can actually be quite a challenge, and it can put you off your stride quite a bit.
So do you get people bluffing as to where they're going and maybe going off on a false route to try and distract you?
It's not unheard of. If you've got a couple of teams that are both at the pointy end of the field, I guess, when, you know, then sometimes there might be the odd, oh no, it's not over here, I can't see the checkpoint over here, which you've previously worked out with your partner as a cunning code for the checkpoint's right over here and I'm standing on top of it.
And so there is a team element to this as well?
Yeah, that's right. So orienteering is typically done solo.
Yeah.
But rogaining is always done as a team of 2 to 5. And that's largely for safety reasons, because if you're doing a 24-hour event, you know, it's typically something like 100 square kilometres of national park. So you could be anywhere out on that 100 square Ks and, you know, break your leg or something.
Right, but also...
to have another person with you.
It's going to be at night time for half of that period as well, which is
that's right.
Another element to it.
The nighttime navigation is by far the most challenging part of the whole event. A lot of people, I think, pretty much avoid the nighttime events and stay doing... I mean, there's lots of events that are only during the daytime, so a lot of people would stick to those. It's really a whole other kettle of fish trying to navigate at night. It takes much longer to get some confidence doing that.
Yeah, I would be scared. But imagine, can you use GPS?
No, GPS is definitely not on the list of legal things to do.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that sort of would defeat the purpose, I think.
So you rely on the compass. It's night time. You've got a torch. That's sounding like you're in a pretty vulnerable situation.
Well, it's you definitely want to have a spare torch. That's for sure. At night time, there's a lot more navigation by the compass than by, you know, during the daytime. You can obviously survey the land around you and compare it to the map and so on. You can still do that at night time because the head torches that people use these days are getting pretty powerful. So you can still see a reasonable distance.
You'd want
but
to be
it definitely
to
makes it much harder.
You'd want to keep an eye on your partner as well. I mean, if I was to say to you, hey, I'm just going to check over that ridge... middle of the night, in the middle of a national park, you could actually then lose your partner, couldn't you?
Yes, and that certainly happened to most people, I suspect. In principle, you're supposed to be always within sight and earshot of your partner. But there's always a very strong temptation to say, oh, yes, that's right, I'll just pop over the spur and check if it's over here. And the amazing thing is when you're out in the bush there, as soon as you get over even a small bump like that, it can often be pretty much impossible to hear the other person. And so, you know, you can be calling out and, think, oh, hang on, where have they gone? You know, I can't see their torch, I can't hear them.
That would be, I would be starting to panic around about that stage.
There's certainly the heart rate can go up a little bit if that happens, So I think fairly early on in people's careers, they have an experience or two like that and then realise, okay, you know, we really do have to make sure they're always in, you know, within eye or earshot.
On 702 ABC Sydney, we look at what people are getting up to around the weekend. Joel Mackay, the 2013 national champion rogainer, with us on the program. So where are these? You mentioned they're held in national parks.
Yeah.
State forests as well?
Yeah, we do state forests sometimes, but there's been, certainly in New South Wales, I'm not sure what it's like in other states. Nowadays, because the state forests will take hunters as well, we've just pretty much steered clear of state forests for a while now, because even though we're able to get in touch with the state forests and book an area of forest for a particular weekend, they will never guarantee exclusive use of the forest. So there could always be someone else out there looking for, you know, pigs or kangaroos. Or...
You've mentioned getting lost at night. You've mentioned going out. I don't think coming across a hunter is something that I'd particularly like. What about in the suburbs? Do you ever get built-up area rogaining?
Yeah, we do, absolutely. There's every year the New South Wales Rogaining Association will have at least one moderately urban event, which will be streets and parks, and it could be somewhere like Lane Cove National Park in Sydney or somewhere like that, where it's a mixture of urban and parkland and some bush trails.
And so Rogaine, what's that mean?
So it comes from the sport was actually invented in Australia about 40 or so years ago now. They say that it was from the Melbourne University Bushwalking Club.
Oh yeah.
And it was the three people who conjured up the idea first were Roger, Gail, and Ian.
Oh right. So Rogaine.
Yes, that's right. Their names are forever immortalised in the name of the sport.
And so the first time you ever did it, because you've been doing it for, 13 or 14 years?
Yeah, that's right.
You, the first time, I believe, you went out and tried a night event.
Yeah, well, I guess not really having much sense of how the whole thing worked. A friend and I went out and had a go at a 24-hour event. He was a very strong navigator, done a lot of navigating, bushwalking and so forth throughout his life. I'd never really done any. And during the day, it went pretty well, actually. He was really able to nail where we were, and we found the checkpoints we were looking for. And then it turned out, though, that a large part of his navigational skill revolved around a very strong ability to look at the map and look at the countryside and sort of map the two of them, you know, very, very clearly between each other. And it's when once night fell and we were sort of in the bush and you couldn't see very far and our head torches weren't that flash back then. Things changed a little bit, yeah. So we'd certainly spend a long time walking back towards the start point along a road and having unsuccessfully tried to find a few checkpoints at night. I think I remember falling asleep while I was walking back at sort of 3 a.m. and, you know, waking up a few seconds later in a ditch on the side of the road.
Oh, well, look, you went on then to become the 2013 national champion with your team. If people want to find out more, is there a Rogaine website?
There sure is, yeah. They can go to New South Wales Rogaining, so nswrogaining.org.
And are you off this weekend to go Rogaining?
Well, not this weekend. There's no event on this weekend, but in a couple of weeks on February 28th, there will be a sort of a metro-type Rogaine up in the Pennon Hills area. And, you know, the great thing is that basically anyone can enter. You can just go to the website, you can enter, you can turn up on the day with your, you know, with a friend and a compass, and they'll give you some maps and they'll give you plenty of help and get you going. And that would be a perfect way to start, actually, because it'll be, you know, bushland, some streets and so on. And so navigation will be fairly straightforward compared to, you know, being somewhere out in the middle of the Wallamai.
Rogaining.org.au, is that it?
New South Rail, nswrogaining.org.
All right. Hey, have a great time out at Pennant Hills, and thanks for sharing your Rogaining.
Yeah, anytime, no worries. Thanks very much.
There's Joel Mackay, the former national Rogaining championship.
Hello, I'm James Valentine from the afternoon program.